Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on identity theft when we come back. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10, it says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt, and usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there's no difference in the value of the gold and silver coin and of the clad coin currency. And that's very true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper, and there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes due on that paper over gold. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people, that they would first have to take away their gold and silver coin to take away the people's right to property and to destroy their property rights. So if you and I intend to regain our property rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights, because property is the legal foundation of all of our liberties. Now, let me teach you how to do just that. And this business school is now a compact disc for you adult homeschoolers. If you'd like more information about my private business school, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Remember, the business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about identity theft. I said when we began the series that somebody stole the entire national identity of the Jewish people. Three groups of those Jews haven't even complained about it. They don't even know that the problem exists. And that's because of a little-known prophecy in Exodus 31 that says that the Sabbath is a sign between God and his people Israel. And when those people threw away their identifying sign, that is Sabbath keeping on Saturday, for sun worship on Sunday, they threw away their claim to the scepter promise. Threw it away. It wasn't that the imposters came along and took it away by force and violence. No, the imposters simply came in and picked it up. They just picked it up and said, hey, look at this. This is of great value. Let us take it. Let us cash it in. It's kind of like they were walking down the street one day and they found it. They found a check on the cement sidewalk, and they reached down, picked it up, and said, gee, look at this check. It's filled out, it's signed, and it doesn't have a payee, so I'll just write my name in here and go cash the check. That's what they've done. And the people who have had their national identity, that is the real Jewish people who have had their national identity taken by their Uncle Esau, don't even know that the check is out there. They don't even know that there's been an imposter. They don't even know yet that their identity has been stolen. Isn't that just real special? Now, much of the world scene today seems to be centered in the region of the Middle East, or the area of Palestine. This land is significant from a historical and biblical perspective, since it is the land of the Bible, and it was the ancient site where Israel once lived. But what is its significance today? Well, Zion, or Mount Zion, was the highest of several hills on which Jerusalem was built, and thus it represents the greatness and the majesty of Jerusalem. Zion was originally a Jebusite stronghold which David had captured, and was thus called the City of David in 2 Samuel 5:7. It was here at Mount Zion that David brought the Ark of God, the Ark of the Covenant, that we read about in 2 Samuel 6, verse 12 through 18, and Zion was the seat of David's rule. It was where his house or palace was erected, and where the tabernacle was first set up. Zion thus became a sacred site and regarded by God as my holy hill of Zion. as we read in Psalms 2, verse 6, and it's called Zion, my holy mountain, in Joel 3, verse 17. And the gates of Zion were loved by God more than all others in Israel, in Psalms 87, verse 2. And it is the place where God dwells, in Psalm 9, verse 11, and Joel 3, verse 17. And Zion was thus the highest and most sacred of the ancient high places. The Mormons use the word Zion National Bank and Zion National Park. And the Jews use Zion and Zionists. It's a term that's used very commonly in religious circles. You know, religious people use this term Zion. It's a biblical word. Now, prophetic Zion, much is spoken of Zion within the area of prophecy. The term Zion is frequently used as the title for Jerusalem as a whole in its quality as a holy city. You'll read that in Isaiah 8, verse 18, and Isaiah 10, verse 24, and Isaiah 30, verse 19. In Isaiah 52, verse 1, Zion is used as a prophetic sense, or in a prophetic sense. It's compared to the New Jerusalem of Revelation 21, verse 2. As the beautiful city in which the unclean and the ungodly are not allowed to enter. It is in the land of this prophetic Zion, or Jerusalem, which God has promised to gather together his people Israel. He says, I will take you, Israel, one of a city and two of a family, and I'll bring you to Zion, in Jeremiah 3, verse 14. Now, the location of Zion, or Jerusalem of prophecy, was also to be in captivity, as we read in Isaiah 52, verse 2. It was to be in pain and troubled and thus needing to be delivered or redeemed from the hands of their enemies, in Micah 4, verses 9 and 10. This Zion is thus not some heavenly abode or spiritual city. It is to be a physical place on planet Earth. An indication of where this gathering of the Israel people would be was revealed in a prophetic promise to David, where God said, Moreover, I will appoint a place for my people Israel, and I will plant them, that they may dwell in a place of their own and move no more. He recorded that in 2 Samuel 7, verse 10, and 1 Chronicles 17, verse 9. And you can also see the reference made to it in Isaiah 49, verse 20. Now note this, that this planting of Israel is something that God will do, not something that he has done. And to help identify where this place of gathering or regathering would be, we need to ask, where was David when these words were spoken to him? David was sitting in Mount Zion in Old Jerusalem. So God was not referring to that geographical area as the land where he would plant Israel. Future tense. God said he was going to plant Israel in another place and was not going to bring them back to the ancient high places in Palestine, for once they were planted in this new place, they were to move no more. That there would be a new Zion is indicated by the phrase daughter of Zion in Isaiah 1 verse 8, Isaiah 62 verse 11, and Jeremiah 4 verses 31. And this was to be the successor of the old Zion and therefore was not the old city of Jerusalem. Based upon the biblical identification of the white European people as being God's true and literal Israel people, the nation of America has often been recognized as this Zion of prophecy or the New Jerusalem. We covered that last week with Stephen Collins' identification of the lost 10 tribes of Israel. The biblical proofs are overwhelmingly in favor of America and not Palestine as the Zion where Israel is to be placed or gathered, and the following are some of those proofs. First, the land Israel was to be gathered into as described as a wilderness or an undeveloped land, but with their arrival it will blossom abundantly as God gives it vineyards or abundance in Isaiah 35 verses 1 and 2. And Palestine was never a wilderness and it never blossomed abundantly. God was to make Zion's wilderness like Eden in Isaiah 51 verse 3. And this is exactly what happened in America, which had attained great material blessings and the highest living standards. Second, Zion was to be a land from sea to sea, as we read in Zechariah 9, verse 10, and Psalm 72, verse 8. America is bordered by two great seas or oceans. Palestine is not. Three, in the land where God shall assemble the outcasts of Israel and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth, Jesus Christ was to be set up as an ensign for God's people in Isaiah 11, verses 1 through 12. In the state of Israel, even the mention of Jesus Christ is prohibited. America is the only nation that was ever legally established as a Christian nation. Four, Israel's restoration was to take place in a land afar or very far off, where they would look upon Zion in Isaiah 33, verses 13 through 20. Now, since this was spoken in Palestine, it could not include Palestine. Six, Zion was to be bountiful in produce and resources, as indicated by its wheat, oil, flocks, herds, corn, and a land as a watered garden. Jeremiah 31, 12, and Joel 2, verses 15 through 19. This is a good prophetic description of America, while Palestine is rather barren in such resources. 7. The New Jerusalem was to be inhabited as towns without walls for the multitude of men and cattle therein. We read that in Zechariah 2, verse 4. Now, old Palestine is full of walled cities. 8. The New Jerusalem was to be very large, a very large land, as indicated by the need for an angel to measure it, with its length and width being 12,000 furlongs. We read that in Zechariah 2, verses 1 and 2, and Revelation 21, 15. This could hardly be referring to the little land of Palestine. Now, there are other earmarks of the Zion of prophecy, or New Jerusalem, in the Bible, which indicate that it was not to be in the ancient land of Palestine. However, all such signs do fit America. So not all of these prophecies regarding Zion or Jerusalem are in reference to the old land of Palestine, nor are they referring to a heavenly abode, but like the old Zion of and in Jerusalem, it's earthly and it is physical, and only America fits the Zion of Bible prophecy. God had cast out his people from the old land for their apostasy, never to return. So that then is all the commotion, or what then is all the commotion and fuss for having Jews in Palestine? And what is the significance of the Jews occupying the ancient places of the Bible? Well, to answer this, we need to understand what is Zionism, and who's behind it, and why. We call it political Zionism, and Zionism has its roots in a Jewish messianic movement, a movement that seeks to establish an independent Jewish state through which their Messiah, the Jewish people as a whole, could rule the world. The place that they decided to occupy was Old Palestine. The modern term Zionism first appeared at the end of the 19th century, denoting the movement whose goal was the return of the Jewish people to Israel, or Palestine, and it was coined by Nathan Birnbaum, a Jew, in his journal on April the 1st, 1890. The term Zionism, as used by Birnbaum, was intended to express a political orientation toward Palestine, as he spoke of a national political Zionist party. This concept was different from the prevailing philanthropic approach, and before this time it was thought practical that the Jews, being a scattered and integrated people, should have a homeland of their own, and humanitarian pleas were made in this regard. And it was at this time that some theologians started supporting the idea as being a fulfillment of Bible prophecy. The actual transition of Zionism from its practical and philanthropic aspect to its political, economic, and military objectives clearly developed with the efforts of the Jewish Zionist leader Theodor Herzl. Herzl argued that the Jews of Western Europe, even after receiving equal rights, had been unable to assimilate and still comprised a nation within a nation. Herzl warned that Jews would be pushed into the arms of the socialist revolution and the stability of the present order would be severely undermined. It was therefore incumbent upon the states of Europe to assist in establishing a Jewish state and assuring it of international legitimization. In response to the Jewish Zionist efforts, there was an offer made by the British government back in 1903 for a Jewish self-governing settlement in Uganda, East Africa. The Zionists look back at this measure as one which nearly wrecked the Zionist movement. In another endeavor to appease the Zionists, the British colonial secretary agreed to give the Jews the British-held Sinai Peninsula, the El Arish Project. But this, too, came to naught. A plan to make Madagascar a Jewish nation also generated no Jewish interest. Clearly, not all of the Jews were in favor of the Zionist plans, as they viewed Herzl as somewhat deranged. Leading rabbis feared that Herzl's ideas would provoke a new wave of anti-Semitism. They denounced the Jewish state concept in pamphlets and at conferences. Likewise, when Napoleon years earlier gave invitation to the Jews to settle in Jerusalem under his aegis, it aroused no Jewish interest. Why then were the leaders of the Zionist movement insistent upon a Jewish state in Palestine and nowhere else? If half of Europe would have been offered to these Zionists, they would still rather have the small barren land of Palestine. But why is that? Well, it's partly because the Jews are incapable of existing on their own. But in Palestine, they could draw Christian support as God's chosen people returning to Zion. There would clearly be great political and financial leverage to be had by possessing the ancient high places of the true Israel people. The leaders of Edom did have a plan, and as the counterfeit Israel people, they could use their cover to fulfill Edomite goals, not the Israelite goals. Zionism is the best advertised of all present Jewish activities and has exerted a greater influence upon world events than the average man realizes. Because of the admixture of the religious sentiment, it will be rather difficult for a certain class of people to scrutinize modern political Zionism. They've been too well propagandized into believing that political Zionism and the return promised by the prophets are the same thing. Now, at the turn of the century, the time was right for a change. A great and significant scene was about to unfold on center stage that was to be in line with God's script, and the Zionist Jews were to be the characters in that script acting out the role of Esau, not Jacob. This brings us up to World War I and the Balfour Declaration. The area of Palestine had been under the control and rule of Turkey, or its Ottoman Empire, which had existed since 1299 AD. In 1882, Edmund Rothschild, a Jew, began financing a Jewish society which attempted the immigration of a considerable number of Jewish settlers into Palestine, prompting the Turkish authorities immediately to publish orders to forbid further entry. On May the 17th, 1901, Theodor Herzl met with the Turkish Sultan regarding Zionist plans and terms for a Jewish national home in Palestine, and an agreement was made. Herzl immediately went to London, where he spoke with much confidence of the success of his mission with the Sultan and asked the Jewish people for £1,500,000 for the purpose of obtaining the charter, but the Jewish people kept silence. Although the Jewish population in general had absolutely no interest in settling in Palestine, the Zionists persisted. This disinterest stems from the bulk of Jewry being ignorant of their own religion and what the Talmud and the protocols have to say regarding world control, which is the very essence of Zionism. The average Jew simply does not know, nor does he understand, nor does he care to understand the role of Zionism and world geopolitical conquest. Political Zionism is part of the Jewish religion as revealed by Rabbi Stephen S. Wise when he stated, "Zionism is Judaism, and Judaism is unthinkable without Zionism." To establish their political goals, the Zionists needed a political change in the Palestinian territory, and there's nothing that can cause political change more assuredly than war. The international Zionists, the bankers, the plutocrats, thus instigated the Balkan War of 1912 and 13, which brought a revolt against Turkey, weakening Turkey and causing Turkey to lose some of its territory. This Balkan crisis was like a powder keg in the European arena, and its repercussions helped to precipitate World War I on July 28, 1914. Now, it was necessary to bring Turkey in on the side of Germany and the Central Powers because the Zionists knew that an Allied victory was expected to result in major territorial changes in the Ottoman Empire, of which Palestine was a part. Upon Turkey's entry into the war, arch-Zionist and Jew Chaim Weizmann commenced a political campaign on behalf of Zionism. During this period, 1915, Weizmann met with Britain's first Lord of the Admiralty, Arthur Balfour, explaining to him the historical roots of Zionism. Balfour was willing to help promote the idea of restoring the Jewish homeland in Palestine if it was liberated from the Turks. The following year, in 1916, several developments that greatly advanced the cause of Zionism took place. There was a strange cabinet crisis in December of 1916, after which Lloyd George became Prime Minister and Arthur Balfour the Foreign Minister, and both of these men and some of their immediate subordinates were outspoken supporters of Zionist aspirations. With this new pro-Zionist individuals now controlling British affairs, it was essential that Britain prevail in the war so Turkey could be conquered and its Ottoman Empire overthrown. The international Zionists agreed to bring the United States into the war to help bail out Britain through the insistence of his intimate advisor, Zionist agent Colonel Edward M. House. Woodrow Wilson brought the United States into World War I in April of 1917. Now, the British forces took possession of Palestine from the Turks in 1917, though the war persisted. The Zionists were pressuring the British to formally issue a declaration that stated Great Britain favored the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people. On July 18, 1917, Lord Lionel Walter Rothschild submitted a draft declaration to Balfour, expressing to him what the Zionists wanted. Later, Balfour addressed the British War Cabinet on the matter, and at the meeting, the declaration was adopted. 2 days later, on November the 2nd, 1917, Lord Balfour wrote a letter to Lionel Rothschild, enclosing a copy of the declaration and requesting him to communicate it to the Zionist Federation. This became known as the Balfour Declaration. To assure that Palestine would be in Zionist control, British forces were ordered to enter and occupy Jerusalem in December of 1917. The highest of the ancient high places was now secure for Jews to immigrate into and to occupy. With the Balfour Declaration, which assured a Jewish national home in Palestine under Britain as the protecting power, many Jews now for the first time gave their support to the World Zionist Organization. At the conclusion of the war, the British received Palestine as a mandate under the League of Nations with the understanding that the Jewish people would be encouraged to settle there, but the discontent of the Arabs, who desired self-government and represented the immigration of Jews, or they resented rather the immigration of Jews, led to constant turmoil. The Zionist plan was being threatened with the sympathy and support of the Arabs that they had in Europe, and further a spirit of nationalism was spreading through the Arabian world. Another dramatic scene was about to be acted out on center stage, and another political change was needed. The Edomite Zionist Jews were scheming world plans. The United Nations partition plan. Palestine had been occupied and ruled by the Arabs ever since the Muslim forces conquered it in 637 AD. The act of establishing a national home for one group of people in an occupied area such as this was an unprecedented innovation in international law. So the Zionists faced the burden of convincing the world that the Jews should be given the right to occupy Palestine. Since this country already had a population, which had been there for centuries, 1,300 years, it could not be simply handed over to the Jewish people. The British government made several unsuccessful attempts to quiet the Arab feelings of hostility to these Zionist plans. Since the Balfour Declaration guarded the rights of the Arab population, no definite conclusions could be arrived at. Another political change was needed, such as that only a war can bring. With Franklin D. Roosevelt and Winston Churchill willing partners of the Zionists, it took very little effort to bring America and Britain into World War II. The aftermath of the war allowed the Jewish Zionists to establish their international organization called the United Nations on October the 24th, 1945. In 1947, the British gave up their Palestine mandate and placed the Palestine problem in the hands of the Zionist-created, communist-controlled United Nations. The General Assembly approved plans to place Jerusalem under international control and to partition Palestine into separate Arab and Jewish states. With the boundary lines drawn in Palestine, according to the Zionist partition plan, a Jewish state in Palestine was established with the backing of the United States. And on May 14, 1948, the Jewish state proclaimed its independence under its president, Chaim Weizmann, and Prime Minister, David Ben-Gurion. The Jewish author, Arthur Koestler, states that the right of the State of Israel to exist is not based on the origins of the Jewish people as being Israel, nor on the covenant of Abraham with God. But rather, it is based on international law, for example, on the United Nations decision in 1947 to partition Palestine. The Jews have not possessed the land according to biblical requirements surrounding Zion. The Israeli state was founded upon a systematic program of violence, deceit, murder, and war instigated by the Jews, the Edomites, and this fact alone should dismiss the idea that they were or are Israel coming to Zion. We should now begin to see the modus operandi of Judaism and Zionism and how they're not always of Israel, but they are of Edom. The Jewish world program was and has been used political upheavals and financial power to obtain its objectives, and this was expressed by the Jewish Zionist leader, Theodor Herzl. He said, "When we sink, we become a revolutionary proletariat, the subordinate officers of the Revolutionary Party, and then when we rise, there rises also our terrible power of the purse." Zionism is part of a program for the political conquest of the world, the United Nations being its chief instrument or supergovernment, as mentioned in the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. The processing and possessing of the ancient lands and the holy places, the high places of Israel, is only a ruse so that the Zionist Jews can sucker the gullible Christians into supporting them as being God's chosen people, fulfilling Bible prophecy. Meanwhile, the Zionists are free to terrorize, murder, sabotage, spy, and get billions in free aid. Jewish Palestine is a communistic and atheist-ridden monstrosity whose only ambition is not to serve the world, but to rule the world. Hang on, we've got to take a quick break here. Let me give you a reminder. We'll be back with more on who is Esau Edom and this thing of identity theft when we come back. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. The endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour or editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. So for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about identity theft on a national scale, and how it affects international geopolitics. Now, when we talk about international geopolitics, when we talk about the relationships of the United States and the Arab world and peak oil and the war in Iraq and all of the various and sundry ideas and all the various and sundry intrigues of the United Nations and the various nations and the treaties that go on among nations, among and between nations around the world, are a part and parcel of Bible prophecy. Now, when you go to church, nobody talks about Bible prophecy. They talk about Jesus and him crucified and the laws abolished and done away with, and you should love one another. And if you want to have an affair with your neighbor's wife, Jesus understands the weakness and frailties of human beings. Go to it. When we talk about law and order, when we talk about the Ten Commandments, or we talk about Bible prophecy, the end times, the second coming, creation, evolution, when we talk about race and race relations and segregation and so on, when we talk about the serious functions of the real world, we all get kind of nervous and we go, oh my God, what will other people think? That's not politically correct. So we don't like to talk about religion. We don't like to talk about politics, race, the very things that are the root causes of problems. The problem with the Israelis and Palestinians is race. Nothing more, nothing less. Those people hate each other. Now, God had a solution for that Palestine problem when he sent Joshua in to conquer the land. He said, destroy them all, throw them out. And that's because back in Genesis chapter 11, he recognized that races of people cannot live together. Now just take a look around the world. You take all the people that have moved into England. You take all the Muslims and all the blacks. They never had race problems in England until they moved in all of these Gentile outsiders, and now they've got race problems. Take a look at what just happened in France. You've got 7 million Muslims living in France. That's a race relations problem. The French are just now beginning to wake up and say, oh my God, we have the same problem here that the Egyptians had with the Israelites when the Israelites were in Egypt. And somebody woke up one day and said, oh my God, look at the way those Israelites are multiplying. Someday there'll be more of them than there are of us. The Jews have recognized that problem in Israel. They've looked at the demographics and they said, if we were to create a Jewish state with Palestinians and Jews, it wouldn't be long until the Palestinians outnumbered the Jews. They breed faster. That's why they've come up with this two-state solution. You've got to have a two-state solution. I remember a few years back, the Arabs, or one Arab king, said to, I believe it was President Truman. I think it was the king of Saudi Arabia talking to Truman. He said, listen, if you guys are so intent upon making a homeland for the Jews, why don't you make it up in Germany, out of the conquered territory? Why are you coming down here and taking our land to give to the Jews? Well, as you can see here, the Edomites, that is, the identity thieves, want Palestine because it's got those old historical places, the high places, which lends well to this fiction that they are the chosen people and they're coming back to their homeland. That never was their homeland. Now, it is true that the Edomites were conquered by the real Jews in 164 BC, and then they took over the political government. They took over the political establishment in Judea. And King Herod, the one that tried to kill Jesus, remember? King Herod was an Edomite. Now, there are three descendants of Judah who are legitimate Jews. The faction called Shelah, the descendants of Judah through his Canaanite wife. Those are real Jews with genetics that date back. You could trace the genealogy back through the Bible and you go back to Judah. And then you have the two boys that came from Judah's affair with his daughter-in-law Tamar. That's Phares and Zerah. Those people today live in Scotland, Canada, and Australia, New Zealand, and in the United States. There's about 45 million Jews, descendants of Judah, real honest-to-God Jews, they're probably call themselves Christians today, who are now sun worshipers, practice Sunday keeping, have given up their Sabbath sign. And then their uncle Edom come along and took the Sabbath sign and usurped their identity. And today, they think they're the chosen people. Now, isn't that just real special? It's a part and parcel of international geopolitics. In the plot that God has designed and put into the Bible and Bible prophecy, you have to have some bad guys. I mean, you got to have somebody who's trying to steal Pearl Pure Heart's ranch so that you can have a good guy, Roy Rogers, who rides in and saves the ranch from Oil Can Harry. It's just the way life is. You don't have a plot, you don't have a story. Well, in 1947, the British gave up their Palestine mandate, remember? And they turned it over to the United Nations. Well, the United Nations was a communist idea to start with, and communism is a Jewish institution. Socialism is not an American or an Israelite ideology. Socialism comes from Edom. Socialism comes from Esau. It goes back into ancient times. It's a pagan philosophy. And remember, it was Ben Franklin said, they will subvert our republic. How did he know that? Well, because they subverted the Roman Empire. They have subverted every government that they have ever had any contact with for the last 2,000 years. They're masters at it. It's their business. Now, you know, God in the Bible gave us certain laws. We Israelites, you know, our 12-tribe Israelite group over here, he says, now listen, follow my instructions, keep my Sabbaths and my holy days, practice my laws, my statutes, my judgments, and my commandments, and everything's going to be fine. We're the ones that gave our finger to God and said, to hell with you, we're not going to do it. We're going to practice mortgages, usury and interest, paper money, the Federal Reserve. We're going to get into politics and so on. And now look at your position today. As Ben Franklin said, these Jews will rise up and they will take over, subvert your government, and reduce you to working in the fields for them. Okay, that's exactly what's happened. But you can't blame the Jews now and say that they stuck a gun to your head. You did it voluntarily. Boys and girls, you threw away, like the prodigal son, you threw away your inheritance. You had it all, and you threw it away. Now remember, it was our great-great-granddaddy, Jacob, that stole this birthright, and those boys have not forgotten that from that day to this. They don't like Christians. And they said in the protocols back in 1884 when they devised them, they said, we are going to tolerate these religions until we take over world control. And when we do, this is called the New World Order. And when this New World Order comes in, boys and girls, they are going to obliterate. They are going to terminate. You talk about the Terminator, they are going to kill every Christian on planet Earth drawing breath. There will be no Christians left alive if they have anything to say about it. Now, you can sit there and play silly games if you want to, but your God is telling you straight from the shoulder, these people are not your friends. And if you want to play games with these people, that's all well and good, but don't cry out to me. And in 1 Samuel chapter 8, God said, don't call me, I'll call you. That's about verse 19. He said, you know, in that day you will cry out to me, and I will not hear you. 1 Samuel 8 is very instructive. Now, we've seen that the Bible speaks of the Israel people going to a new Jerusalem or Zion, which is in the new land. Now, as for the story regarding the ancient land, its use by God's people has to come to an end. Thus saith the Eternal, the God, the land of Israel, an end. The end is come upon the four corners of the land. And I'll give it into the hands of the strangers for a prey, and to the wicked of the earth for a spoil, and they shall pollute it. Israel today is polluted. It's been taken over by our enemies. Wherefore, I will bring the worst of the heathen, and they shall possess Israel's houses. I will also make the pomp of the strong to cease, and their holy places shall be defiled. He said that in Ezekiel 7:2 and 7:21 and 7:24. It's come to pass. This prophecy was given to Ezekiel in 586 BC. From that time on, the land was destined to be in the possession of the stranger or the alien, not Israel. Now, many non-Israelite people have occupied Palestine, and now the Jews, the worst of the heathen, possess it, and by their acts of terrorism and filthy religion, they have polluted the land, and they have defiled the ancient holy places. Thus, the Jews cannot be Israel. Now, we found out last week who Israel is. Now, there are some real descendants of Judah who are Israelites. As I pointed out, all Californians are Americans, but not all Americans are Californians. Not all Jews are Israelites. You know, just because you claim to be an Israelite doesn't make you an Israelite. You have to have the genealogical code to go along with it. You know, just because you say, I'm a Pole or I'm a Czech or I'm a Russian doesn't make it so. You have to be born. It's something that you have no control over. You are what you are, and that's the bottom line. Now, remember I mentioned to you here that the president of Iran is calling for the extermination of these Jews. God has said, vengeance is mine, saith the Eternal, and I will repay. We don't have any power to go around killing these people. Who gave you that authority? Who gave you the vigilante authority to go out and kill people? The law says you shall do no murder. And your God has said to you, you obey me, keep my commandments, follow my statutes, my judgments and commandments, everything's going to be fine. You wouldn't have a problem with the Jews. You don't have to support Israel. It's a political decision that Americans have made. We've decided that those people are the chosen people and we're going to support them. So, okay, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Ben Franklin said, you ought not to let them in here. And we said, oh no, you guys have got your heads up the wrong end. We're going to let them in. Okay. Now that you've made that decision, that's a done deal. Now, in the real world, when these done deals are made, you know, you're already embroiled in the war in Iraq. It's a little late now to say, oh gosh, we got bum intelligence and we shouldn't have gone to war over there. Yeah, that's right. But, you know, it's a little late now, isn't it? You're already embroiled in the Israeli-Arab conflict. It's a little late now. And did you know that there's a prophecy concerning Jerusalem? I'm going to share this with you because God said everybody, in Zechariah 12, verse 38, he says, everybody that messes with Jerusalem is going to get burned. Everybody that messes with them. Let's see if I can find Zechariah 12, 38 here. There's Daniel. There's Amos. Let me flip over here a couple of more pages. I think I can find it. 12:38. Stand by. Now, I'm not a real preacher. I'm just a pretend. 12, verse 38. I always tell people that when I'm butchering a cow, you know, I'm not a real butcher. I'm just a pretend butcher. I can cut the meat up, but I'm not a real butcher here. 12:38? I did. Zechariah. That can't be right. There is no verse 38. Well, I'll have to come back and I'll have to give you the correct quote on that. I cited that one incorrectly in my notes here, but there's a scripture here that says that anybody that messes with Jerusalem is going to get burned. They're going to have nothing but trouble. And that makes me, every time I pick up the newspaper, every time I watch the news and I see the United States is involved in peace negotiations between the Israelis and the Arabs, and President Bush has got this highway plan or roadwork plan or something, whatever the hell he's talking about, and then President Clinton was constantly working over here. All that does, boys and girls, is get you burned. The best thing you can do is butt out. How do I know that? God himself told us. You want to mess with Jerusalem? You want to butt into something that's none of your business? You want to have nothing but grief from now on? Mess with Jerusalem. Go ahead and butt in and see what happens to you. Well, it's in Zechariah someplace, and I'll have to look that up. Oh, I'll tell you what it is. It's Zechariah 12, verse 3. Hang on a second. Let me see if I can find that one again. And in that day will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces, though all the people of the earth be gathered together against it. And he says, I'm going to cut you to pieces when you mess with Jerusalem. And you can just take a look at the Palestinians. Are they being cut to pieces? Well, the United States is also being financially cut to pieces over that whole Israeli-Palestinian affair. I did a little calculation not too long ago. I figured that for the, I think it's about 5,000 square miles of real estate. 5,000 square miles. I think that you could pay every Palestinian $100,000 each, cash money, and just tell them, here's the check, go move any place you want in the world and go resettle. For the amount of money that we have spent, we Americans, what we have spent on that Israeli project over there since 1948, you could just write those guys a check and say, hey, go live in Argentina or any damn place you want to. Go buy yourself a piece of ground someplace. I mean, every man, woman, and child over there. And there's still no end in sight. No end in sight. Everybody that burdens himself with it will be cut to pieces. Preachers continue to harp on the subject or the subject matter of the Jews in Palestine, despite the fact that God said that he would abandon that land and would do to Jerusalem as I have done to Shiloh in Jeremiah 7, verse 14. God forsook the tabernacle of Shiloh. You see that in Psalm 78, 60. So with the Babylonian captivity of Jerusalem and the destruction of the Temple of Solomon in 586 B.C., God had forsaken the old city of Jerusalem and will never rebuild his temple there. And I'll make this house like Shiloh, and I'll make this city, Jerusalem, a curse to all the nations of the earth. And from that day to this, it's been a curse. People have been fighting over that piece of real estate from that day to this. The whole battle over Jerusalem is over the Palestinians say that they want Jerusalem, and the Jews say, we've got it, and we ain't giving it back. This has been going on for thousands of years now. This isn't something new. And why do we want to get embroiled in it? It's kind of like the Middle Ages, you know, with the Crusades, and they went back over there, the English did, on three Crusades to free Jerusalem from the infidels. And the Muslims are over there, and they're going to free Jerusalem from the infidels. Everybody's fighting over the same piece of real estate. And God has abandoned this ancient high place in old Palestine. When Israel inhabited the land, it was described as a land flowing with milk and honey in Exodus 3, verse 8. Ancient history identifies this land as being rich and fertile and as part of the Fertile Crescent. Look at it today. It's a wasteland. It's barren. It's a desert. No significant lifestyle could be maintained on this land as in the days of old. Only by continued infusions of money, aid, and technology from the Christian West are the Jews able to survive on that piece of real estate today. What greater evidence need there be to prove that this is not the great and beautiful Zion of prophecy and that God has abandoned this land and chosen another for his people Israel? So the actions on the part of the Jews, such as rebuilding of Solomon's temple or bringing in Jewish immigrants from all parts of the world, have no relevance to Israel or to their role or prophecy in the scripture. Now, we covered that last week with Stephen M. Collins, and we talked about where is Israel today. Israel's been well taken care of, and Edom has been well cursed. Now, the Edomites have lived very well. They have lived sumptuously off of us. If you take a look at the Jews in America today, they live very well. They're in entertainment. They're in the movies. They're in banking and the professions. They're the lawyers and the doctors and so on. They're not hurting, and we support them. And as this one Jew so eloquently put it, he says, you know, we don't work, we don't toil, we don't build anything, we don't do jack squat, but we live very nicely. And that's what Ben Franklin said. He said, you know, these people are parasites, and they live a parasitic lifestyle. I don't know why people want to support them, but for some reason they do. Now, sometimes you'll find women that do that. They'll take a man and they'll support him. They'll take some bum and they'll support this guy. And they seem to like to do that. I'm not quite sure why, but for some reason, women will do that. Americans have done the same thing, or the Western Christian West, that is the Germans and the various countries of Western Europe, have all supported the Jews. The Edomite Jews, I might point out. Not the real Jews, but the usurpers. I was looking for that citation over here. I remember what it looked like. It was in parentheses over here, but I don't see it right away. But go back to yesterday's program or the day before, and I cited this guy's observations. He was a Jewish fellow himself, and he said, you know, we don't produce anything, but and we don't tend any fires, we don't build any bridges, we don't do this, we don't do that, but we live very well in the process, and indeed they do. Now, there is a world conflict, and there's great adversity in the world, and this is called Jacob's Trouble. It's called the Great Tribulation, and we're on the cusp of a nuclear bomb war. We're reaching peak oil. The population of the world is 6 billion plus. There are 20,000 people a day starving to death. There's a struggle going on in the world. As the Apostle Paul said, the whole creation groans in travail. Well, not here in the United States. We're living very sumptuously here in the United States. There's no problems here. Western Europe, hey, we don't have any problems. But we don't see the debt, the balance of payments problem that we Americans face. The average Joe Sixpack, he hasn't got a clue. He's waiting for the rapture. He's living in a life of sumptuous luxury, and he expects that that's going to go on forever. Well, boys and girls, I think we are in for a shock, and our Uncle Esau is going to be the catalyst that brings that shock upon us. Good old Uncle Esau. Well, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night talking about the identity thieves when we return. Thanks for listening. I'll see you then. Good night, friends.